You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where sometimes you just don't have it in you to come up with a witty opening. I'm your host, Justin M. Lazeski, and I am exhausted. Coming up on the midpoint of the second semester of the year for teaching, also in the, I don't know if it's the postseason, the season, I don't know how you would say it, but in the heart of the state series for wrestling, just finished up the regional championship and now going into the state championship, and our school runs both of those. They didn't run the district, thankfully, but they ran girls states that same week. So last week it was girls state championship, states. I don't know. We'd have to figure that one. Which one would you say? Would you say they're going to states or you're going to state? I don't know. That's an interesting debate. Let me know what you think there. So last weekend was the girls state championship. I think it's states because it's like multiple weight classes. So I think it's states. I think I've just settled on that. So it was girls states last weekend. This weekend was regionals, and next weekend is boys states. So I'm exhausted. I'm going to be exhausted, and I'm also pretty disconnected. And I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't know if I would have recorded this episode if William didn't bug me and didn't send me an inspirational puppy picture. So this is most definitely the inspirational puppy picture edition. And I'm going to bring in my co-host who sent me that inspirational puppy picture. From Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his gay white male privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. We might have to add puppy to that privilege list. Certainly exhausted as well, but it was a great week this week. At the store in March is our month of giving, and so we had a team meeting for all the staff, and I got to, you know, I coached the GM and the assistant GM on how to do the presentation, and basically I got to sit back and watch, and there were mistakes and everything else. We did a quick retro after, but I think they finally saw a bunch of things that I was coaching them on pay off, and it was a really proud moment for me, growing people, seeing them basically run this whole thing, and one of the reps was there that helps out with the store from the area, so one of the franchise reps, so they got to see it too, so it was pretty good, and the puppy has kept me busy, in a good way. Much like you, Justin, been disconnected. We were talking before the show, like, oh, was there what's going on? You know, like, there's things going on in the world, and depending on where how you look at it, the world either got smaller or deeper, I think is probably the better way to put it. At least this week, focusing on some values that we care about. So I think it's interesting to come back up, reconnect with the Midsiders, and witness some farce and talk about some art, because we've got a couple I did manage to squeeze in a couple of good things this week as far as good art. Well, we'll see about that.
Yeah, William's going to handle all that, because I'm disconnected to the point that the next movie I may watch is the Snyder Cut, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, I think it's interesting that both of us sort of weren't involved with the world this week. And I don't know if we wanted to be, because I think you raise an interesting point when you talk about a puppy privilege, because we don't talk about that. And I think this week proved that there is a pet privilege in this country, specifically a puppy one. Let's talk about that in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. This life really sucks. Cause I'm on the road here. I hope that you're making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the As always, if you would like to support the show, you can do so through Patreon or through Locals. Patreon is per episode or per piece of content we create, and Locals is per month. It's themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/Locals. And William, what I was alluding to at the beginning of the episode was a story that came out this week that I'm only passingly aware of, but it's still so absurd that Elliot, former co-host Midsider Elliot, tweeted it at me and talked about farce. And I know it's on your radar, and it's directly related to dogs and the way we treat dogs in this culture. So Lady Gaga's two dogs were stolen while the dog walker was walking them, and the dog walker was shot. And then there was an interesting reaction to all of this. First of all, I don't know about you, William, but I never learned the status of the dog walker until I just Googled it pre-show. I didn't know if he was alive or dead because I just heard the dog walker was shot. And that's all I heard about the dog walker. And then everyone online was expressing concern over the dogs being missing. And Lady Gaga even did it. Lady Gaga gave a $500,000 reward for the dogs, for the return of the missing dogs. William, why does nobody care about the dog walker?
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
I, too, wondered that. Some dude who's apparently been they keep referring to, I think it's a him, as longtime dog walker. 30 years old was the other detail I picked up. So, longtime dog walker, and I know Adam Carolla did a rant on this on his show. Nobody talks about the actual human that was shot. No reward for finding it. I understand the sympathy for the dog, obviously. I mean, I just posted a live puppy shot in Discord. And I, too, would probably murder someone if they tried to take this puppy away from me, right? However, the person got shot, right? That there's no concern, no reward for catching a person who would shoot someone over stealing a dog. That seems absurd, right? Do you think that this is similar? I'm thinking of similar stories. I remember, I don't remember if it, which broadcaster told the story, but they were telling a story about how talking about a plane crash is one thing. Talking about a plane crash and then there's puppies lost. You know, maybe that's another Adam Carolla thing. All of a sudden it becomes a national news story, right? You know, some little Cessna goes down and, a husband and wife are killed. Oh, wow. Interesting. Oh, and their dog. And now it's all of a sudden all over national news, right? Is it twisted? Is this really valuing the dog's life over the puppy's life? Like, maybe I can have some sympathy for Lady Gaga if this was just like some random person that was walking her dog, right? And maybe she has some sympathy to that, but then she's also like, hey, listen, like, these are my dogs. I want them back, right? I can sort of understand that, but that's not how it's being framed, right? It's being framed as, like, the lack of any concern for the person, especially because it's a longtime dog walker. It seems rather strange.
It seems rather strange.
Are we going to find out later that this was an inside job gone wrong? I mean...
I heard some speculation of that during the week.
What other explanation is there for, like, the complete lack of concern, at least publicly, for the perpetrator that shot your employee, right?
Right, and that's where I'm kind of even lost with your sort of comparison. So yeah, I heard some things about it possibly being an inside job. The dog walker was in on it, blah blah blah. And I get that the dogs are like extraordinarily valuable. Like that style of bulldog is like very valuable, I guess. I mean, of course, it's Lady Gaga. Why wouldn't she have valuable bulldogs? Only the best for Lady Gaga. But no, it's funny. It's weird because we're living in an age, right, where we have all this stuff that's like Black Lives Matter and fight the patriarchy because it's all about supposed to be the value of human life, right? The value of human life. And that's something that we can agree with. I mean, I say we because I think one of the basic tenets of objectivism is the value of human life, the value of each individual human's life. So to me, that means human life is superior to animal life. Then it doesn't matter what the relationship with the dog walker is, William. It doesn't matter if she knew him for years. It doesn't matter if she hired him through one of these apps. The first concern would be that someone would shoot another human being over animals or money at this point, and they probably wanted the dogs to sell them.
Yeah, yeah. They probably didn't want the dogs themselves. Yeah.
Right. It's tragic. And I, indirectly is the word I'm looking for. I unintentionally put this person in harm's way, and I feel bad about that. And I want to catch the person who hurt this person that I indirectly put in harm's way. It wasn't my intent to, but I feel bad about that because I wouldn't want my dogs to put anyone in danger, because if I thought they would, I wouldn't have them. Right? I mean, isn't that the rational way to approach things? But it's interesting that we live in this society that supposedly values human life above all, but we have this thing about dogs, and it's not cats, it's dogs. It's this thing where it's like, oh, I like dogs more than humans. I like animals more than humans. And they, when they say animals, it's always code for dogs, right? Or horses. Sometimes it's horses, right? Why is that? Why is there almost this, I want to say fetishization, but I don't want to sexualize it because it's not sexual. But why is there like this obsession with dogs in this way?
Well, I think part of it is rational in, or at least explainable, in that there's a loyalty that we've bred into dogs, and with that comes a sort of personification of innocence, right? And so there's this aspect of like protecting something that has this loyal / innocent behavior, right? So let's acknowledge that piece, but that doesn't elevate it above humans, though. Like, right? Like that may add some special punishment to folks who mistreat, you know, at least in my mind, not saying government punishment, right? People who mistreat dogs and things like that. But it's I don't know how to interpret what this whole situation is with Lady Gaga, other than apparently she values the dogs more than the human life of someone who works for her.
I completely get the innocence point. Like, I get that. But even that bothers me, because that implies being a child is better than being an adult, and that's something I don't agree with at all. I think innocence is a weaker state. It's necessarily a weaker state. That's why you need parents. And it's the same thing with animals, right? That's why pets, especially pets who we keep in a more innocent state than wild animals, need owners. And then there's another thing with that that bothers me even more. I think it's the unconditional love. I think it's the idea that they say that dogs will love people no matter who they are. And these are people who are yearning for not self-improvement, but to be loved in spite of all their flaws. And they see dogs giving them that and not humans. And therefore they say dogs are better. And I think it's very emotional in that way. And, you know, dogs may not even do that. I've never owned dogs, so I'm not aware of that enough. But I would think dogs have some sort of self-protection mechanism, that if you were to be terrible towards them or a terrible person, that they would be terrible to you. But we have this myth, this image of dogs, that they have this idea of, or this way of acting upon unconditional love, that I think people combine with the innocence thing, and it bothers me.
Yeah. I completely agree.
And I think that was part of what that was about. But of course, this is also the social media stuff, right? All the crazy stuff that happens on social media. And we've seen a couple things like that on social media. I just saw a live puppy shot William put in the chat there. He put it in the general chat. So if anyone's in our Discord right now, they can see that. He put that while recording. That's a pretty cute picture. I mean, look, I like animals. I like dogs. I don't approach them in an irrational way. I mean, trust me, my cat who's in here right now, she is the biggest baby in the entire world because she's so spoiled and so protected. But I don't value her over human life. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Anyway, yeah, this is all social media stuff, right? This is all social media stuff. And one of the things that was posted in our Discord, which is why I was pulling it up, was one of the midsiders in there shared an article that people are attacking Henry Cavill over dating Gina Carano in like 2013. Did you see this, William?
Yeah, that's some timey-wiminess, as pointed out in Discord. He dated her before all of this came out, so I guess he needs to travel. Like, does that mean that, like, you know, someone, you know, I dated, like, in college, if they go on to become Hitler, that I'm somehow, responsible or should be, I don't know, shunned?
Well, even worse than that, high school. Like, everyone, like, likes people who end up being terrible in high school. I mean, isn't that the mark of it? Like, you're being shallow rather than learning about character and seeing how the two integrate to like someone. So isn't everyone like, if again, we get to the fact that you would have to cancel everyone for it.
Oh, man. I look forward to it.
Not to mention that Gina Carano wasn't even canceled over anything worthwhile.
Yeah, I know. That's a whole another crazy story.
Yeah. But then what's the other thing that's been going on social media? The minimum wage debate. The minimum wage debate is still going. Like, that's insane.
Well, Biden
the minimum
canceled
wage
it,
debate...
but I guess Pelosi might bring it back. So I guess it's keeping it in the news.
Oh, Biden said he's not going to do the minimum wage thing?
Yep. And then Pelosi threatened to put it into the COVID bill or some sort of earmark somewhere. So we'll see.
Okay, so we'll see what happens with it, but the debate's still raging on. And it's just crazy to me because, like, this is one of those things that's, like, so obvious if you have any basic knowledge. And the way people just, like, make shit up, right? I don't remember how this thread came about because Brian from the Adam Carolla show tweeted a rich man, poor man, raising the minimum wage greatly impacts your life. Which, again, this is a leftist thing, a slow creep thing, right? Now, Adam Carolla retweeted it and said true, because, you know, that's a true rich man, poor man, right? It doesn't greatly impact your life. But it's the Adam Carolla slow creep principle of, first they said there was a smoking section. Then they said you had to smoke outside. Then they said you can't smoke within 100 feet of the building. It's the same thing. That's what the left does, and that's how you end up with California. They gradually change things, and if you gradually change enough small things, well, you end up with a big outcome. And that's the whole thing about the minimum wage. How much are you going to raise it? How much are you going to raise it? And when does it become acceptable? The trade-off to basically feel like you're making enough money when it's not really making a difference. And I don't understand how, like, people just make shit up, William. I saw this tweet this morning. This tweet, I actually had to retweet it. It was like a reply to a reply in the Brian Bishop thread. And this random lady was like, minimum wage is $15 in Seattle, and a Big Mac costs blah, blah, blah. Minimum wage is $15 in Seattle, and a Big Mac there costs as much as it does anywhere else. Where do people, like, get this stuff, William?
I don't know.
Within 7 miles of multiple McDonald's, okay? I'll just pick three of them, right? I live within 7 miles of a McDonald's up 535 that's in Orlando in Orange County. I live within 2.5 miles of one that's on 192 in Kissimmee in Osceola County. And I live within 5 miles of one that's on Walt Disney World property. They all have different prices. And can you guess which one's the most expensive?
Walt Disney World.
Right, 100%. You go there and it's nice and it's new. And of course, they have the surcharge of it's Walt Disney World property. So whenever you open a store on Walt Disney World property, and this is true of Disney Springs, Downtown Disney's, they get a percentage of your profits. So that's why the prices are all higher there versus if you went somewhere else. So if you go to the Lululemon in Disney Springs versus the outlet, you're paying premium prices on Disney Springs because part of that's going to Disney. Then, can you guess what the second highest prices are?
Maybe Kissimmee?
No, that's the poorer area. It's
Orlando.
Orange County. That's the city, right? Orlando is one of the more leftist areas. Now, the difference in price between Orlando and Kissimmee is not that big. But it is big enough that if you buy on the mobile app it'll tell you if you have your place selected as Orlando or Kissimmee, and then you switch from Kissimmee to Orlando or Orlando to Kissimmee, tells you there's been a price change because you're going to a different restaurant now. So how do people, I don't understand this, William. How do people just believe this shit when it's disconnected from reality? All you have to do is go to McDonald's.
Yeah, I kind of joined in on that thread a little bit, and because I think there's a lot of misconceptions, right? Like, first of all, one person was saying, like, well, people can just charge $50 for a Big Mac if they want to. No, I mean, I don't know of a single franchise restaurant that lets the franchisee arbitrarily set their price. And there's a lot of reasons for that, right? Like, you could undercut everyone else, right, and devalue the product. Or you could set the price too high and, you know, ruin brand reputation. So basically your price changes is kind of a negotiation with the franchise, right? Between the franchisee and the franchise. You say, oh, right, I'd like to have this price. And then the franchise approves it. And then that's that, right?
Right. And I would assume there's also an acceptable range.
Absolutely. I don't know that like for each product, but yeah, there's you know, you take into account average ticket price, product mix. Like, there's tons of things that go into that, right?
Right. Now, the person you were replying to had a right idea. They were just applying it improperly. To me, that's different from being completely disconnected from reality and just believing things that aren't true at all.
Yeah, the other thing is disconnected from the product price. You know, in the restaurant industry, you kind of go by percent of sales for costs. You track a lot of costs, you know, on your P&L when you're thinking about operating profit. Like, what's the percent?
Do you want to tell people what P&L means?
Yeah, profit and loss. Sorry, your profit and loss statement. You think about things in terms of operating profit as a percent of the total sales, so total revenue minus discounts for your location. So if you think about a particular location and you say, we're going to make things really simple percents, you know, you want labor to be at 20%. And that's from experience, you know, it's general industry practice. You know, some restaurants can have higher labor, but they make up for it in other ways, right? But in general, like, again, making all things be equal, making things as simple as possible, 20% is what you're aiming for. So that means it doesn't matter what the price per hour of the employee is, because you got to hit that 20%, right? Yeah, 20% of revenue for labor. You won't allocate. So let's say you just suddenly increase the cost per hour of the employees. So you raise them from, like, let's say $13 an hour to $15 an hour. That doesn't change the fact that you still have to hit 20%. So what do? The employees have to work harder. I.e., they get less hours, right? Because the amount of capital available to the labor didn't change, right? The sales is still whatever the sales are for the month, right? The labor has to be whatever 20% of that is. So you just reallocate the hours, right? And so they have to be more productive. Instead of maybe having, you know, at a McDonald's, instead of having 9 people working during lunch rush, maybe you only have 7 people working during lunch rush. The same stuff has to get done. Right. Because that's just like you were talking about being connected to reality. That's just the reality. So now you can raise prices, right? That is the other thing. And then I think one other comment I had was, I think someone on the thread on that thread was talking about, well, you know, the price hike went into effect and, the prices didn't change. That actually is, because, unlike most people on that Twitter thread or some people on that Twitter thread, businesses have to think ahead. So I have to deal with minimum wage laws, of course, in Long Beach. And, because of the size of our company, we're a little behind the other, like, companies of a certain size get stepped up before, companies below a certain size, but due to two factors. One, market pressure, right? Like, if everyone else is paying a higher minimum wage than me, that's not competitive for me in the labor market. But also, two, because you want to make sure that your operational processes are in place before the price hike of labor. So you want to start bringing those wages up before the mandate, because you want to make sure all your things are running smoothly, right? That your staff can operate with those reduced hours. right? And so you put that in, you start to make that stuff in as early as possible. As soon as you know that, okay, in 3 years, it will be $15 an hour minimum wage. Okay, then you back it up every year and you say, okay, well, what do I need to have my floor labor rate be, you know, going back in 6 month increments, right? So that you can prepare to, you know, operate your business with that new cost in place. And I think one last comment before moving on, because I haven't had a nice rant on minimum wage in a while. When we get back to those hours things, I think that's something people don't think about, because they think, oh, if we raise from $12.50 to $15 an hour, all these people's paychecks will be bigger. And that's not true. If we get back to that percent thing, right? If the percent cost, if the amount of capital available to the employer doesn't change, right? Then the hours go down, so the paycheck effectively stays the same, or may even shrink, right? Because now you're not getting overtime and other things, right? So that's another scary fact that people don't take into effect. They think, oh, we'll just raise the minimum wage $15 an hour, everybody will have a living wage. That's not how that works, right? They might have a living wage if they got to work 45 hours a week, 40 hours a week. But guess what? Then that many hours aren't available, right? Like that, the available hours at $15 an hour goes down compared to at $12.50 an hour. So it's something to keep in mind. Like that, if the goal was a living wage, raising the minimum is not necessarily going to have the effect you think it's going to have.
Right. And what you're saying, first of all, they would just reply to that and say, well, the issue is you're the one taking away the hours, not reality. Right. Because yeah. They would say, yeah, you socially construct reality. So you're the jerk for taking away the hours. But what you're talking about is the unseen costs. And that's the slow creep I'm talking about. So when we return to the original tweet, the Brian tweet from the Adam Carolla show, where he says rich man, poor man, raising the minimum wage greatly impacts your life. He's implying there that the impact is it helps the poor. But what you're saying is the unseen cost is it actually hurts the poor. And yeah, I agree that the great impact
To give Brian credit, I think he's more talking about, like, you actually care about it, right? Like, you think, oh, this is going to affect my paycheck, right? That certainly is a rich man, poor man. But there's other people in the thread who definitely took it a different way.
Okay, well, fair enough for that. But that's part of what I'm talking about with the slow creep, is the idea that it does affect the middle class, because it devalues the dollar and it moves the middle class closer to the lower class. And that's why in places like California, there basically is no middle class anymore. You're basically upper lower class or you're upper class.
Yeah, definitely. You either can afford a house or can't.
Basically. But I mean, this disconnect, we're just seeing this disconnect in general. And another story that came up this week that, you know, I'm not 100% familiar with, and we looked at it before the podcast, and I still don't really understand what's going on. It still makes not much sense to me. But I find it funny in a way, but I also find it kind of tragic, because it returns to the idea of being disconnected from the value of human life. Because it's largely the same people who are saying, this is how this is all crazy, right? And I didn't even think of this through line ahead of time. But the same people caring about the dogs are the same people saying we need to raise the minimum wage to value human life. And they're the same people who are okay with Biden bombing Syria. What I don't understand about this, William, is I don't get why he bombed Syria. And I don't get why no one is like, oh, yeah, now the Democrats are the war hawks. Like, do you remember growing up that the Democrats were the one who opposed all war action and, like, they hated W. Bush 43
yeah.
for all this stuff in Iraq? But now Biden's the one bombing people? Look, I get that they're saying, like, Iran attacked U.S. targets. And yeah, any loss of American life is terrible. But is it worth moving us closer to war? And is it worth bombing people in Syria? This doesn't seem like, I don't know, I just don't get it. I don't get it on any level.
And lest I be called a dove, I have less of a problem with the what, provided the why is widely circulated, right? Like, for example, I have no problems with Trump Was it using that drone to, like, take out that convoy with the bad guy in it? Or the attack on the military base? Like, I had no problems with those things. Like, oh, yeah, sure. Military targets. I can, you know, I dug into it. Makes sense, right? This is just some random building in a random city that supposedly had some people in it. Okay, tell us more, right? Like, what, like, this is from someone who's, we're supposed to, it, the defense of it on from the Twitterati who were calling, you know, Trump fascist for those two bombings that I talked about, those two military actions I talked about, are all like, oh, we should just trust Biden. And it's like, man, trust Biden, you know? He's already broken almost all of his campaign promises, right? Like, add this to the checklist. No minimum wage hike. No, you know, COVID wasn't solved. It was supposed to be cured, right, by now. He was supposed to cure cancer by now. You know, all these other things, right? I'm being facetious.
Supposed to give us stimulus. We're supposed, yeah, to, supposed get more to give stimulus us
$2,000. All these things, right? Like, and now he's, he said he wouldn't involve us in the endless wars in the Middle East. Ooh, okay. Except for this one bombing is okay. How does that fit into that picture? No one's asking him about it. Okay.
Right, and that's the thing with me, like the politics of it, the Democrats versus Republicans, that doesn't interest me as much. It's just, again, it's just the unquestioning part that you said, the unquestioning part. That's what I don't get, and I don't get there's just no talk of values anymore. And it's so interesting to me that things have, like, switched sides. Everything is pragmatic now. Everything is pragmatic now, and it blows my mind. It blows my mind. Not as much as Syria was blown up, but it blows my mind. Okay, I don't think we have anything else to add in this segment, so I think it's best that we move on to William doing a review and a little bit of Zack Snyder talk in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. As always, if you would like to continue this conversation during the week, you can do so in our Discord channel. Somebody reached out via Facebook and asked us about the Discord channel. Hey, people, I see it every episode on the podcast. This is the podcast. That's redundant. I don't know why I said it. But on every episode, I say, all you got to do is go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link. And in there, there will be a link to join the Discord channel. That's it. That's all it takes. And then you can see pictures of William's dog. You can talk to us about Henry Cavill being canceled for Gina Carano, dating Gina Carano in the past. You can send us a bunch of other stuff that's interesting. There's been a lot of great content in there this week, so we appreciate that. So, quickly, William, I didn't get to see anything this week. I probably won't get to see anything until the Snyder Cut, but you watched Greenland.
Right, how was it? I watched Greenland. It's kind of an action slash family drama movie, kind of a thriller. So you could tell it was kind of intended to be a summer blockbuster. You'll get a lot of Independence Day, but not funny like Independence Day, but like Independence Day level sort of drama and catastrophe films, maybe like, you know, Day After Tomorrow sort of stuff, right? Great effects. This was a movie that I would have enjoyed to see in the movie theater, Justin. And not because it's a great movie or something you need to jump out and see, but because it would have been a fun experience, right? There's a lot of explosions. There's some great special effects. There's some good action. It's starring... what's his name? Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler. Leonidas.
Yep, Leonidas is in this. And it's got, I forgot how to say her name, Marina Baccarin. She's in Firefly.
And Deadpool.
Yep, and Deadpool. And Scott Glenn is in this. And,
It's two out of three people are in Snyder movies. Scott Glenn and Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
And the director is Rick Romanois, who's, I guess, really his background is in stunt coordinating. So, you know, after you watch the movie, you'll sort of see that maybe some of the drama stuff could have been a little better. And maybe that's from a little bit from the direction. Story-wise, especially the first, I would say, 45 minutes is very well done. As the family drama sort of comes in and out, there's some questionable choices by the characters, but they certainly have consequences, which I think is fine. In particular, without giving any spoilers, the mother makes a decision to be trusting and sort of finds out that during an apocalypse, people are not trusting. I think there's, you know, that probably hits some of that, some of that vibe that a little bit more romantically realistic in an apocalypse, right? That there are going to be some people who are good and some people who see the collapse of civilization as, you know, a time where they no longer value other people, right? They see other people as threats. And how you deal with that and how they deal with that is really interesting. Overall, you should see this movie if you can simulate the movie theater experience. You have a big screen and a nice sound system. I think this is something that you would say, just like me would say, man, I kind of wish I had saw this in the theater. It's decent. You shouldn't see this if you're expecting sophisticated, deep philosophic things. I mean, there is some stuff about like how society crumbles in an apocalypse that I found interesting, but this is certainly not going to win any Oscars for acting or writing.
Well, what you're saying, William, is why I don't think the theater experience will ever go away. You know, people are always talking about, well, if you get the technology at home. Yeah, part of it is the technology. But part of it is actually going to a different room and having that experience. And then the other part is the shared social experience of having that sort of stimulation in that way. And, you know, you talk about Greenland. It reminds me of like Godzilla versus Kong. That's a movie that I will probably end up seeing. And I think it would be better in theaters. And, you know, good thing I live in Florida where theaters are open. But like movies like this are ones that I would go in theaters and I would enjoy and not expect much from, but still expect a good experience. Okay, I think we're on the same page there.
Yep.
So on that same sort of token, I think what makes Zack Snyder movies so great is that they're the combination of those two things. They're the combination of the experience, but also the sophistication. And I don't know, William, if I've talked to you about any of the stuff that's upcoming. Like, have I talked to you about the Snyder Cut trailer? And did you see the Army of the Dead trailer that came out this week?
So I have been paying attention to the Snyder Cut stuff. I have not seen the other trailer yet, so.
You've not seen the Army of the Dead trailer?
I watched part of it, and then got distracted by a puppy, so.
Okay, well, you do have a puppy, so maybe that's understandable. But here's the thing about the Army of the Dead trailer. Like, it made me, like, appreciate the fact that there's more to Snyder than being a DC director. And I think that's forgotten so much in today's day and age, especially because so many of the people who are claiming to be Zack Snyder fans are really DC fans. And it makes me almost in a way more excited for Army of the Dead. I want to see what he can do with something wholly original. I want to see what he brings to the table now. All of this other stuff, you know, yeah, we've been waiting for the Snyder Cut and I've been waiting for it for years and I'm excited for it. It's going to be a big event and it's a big event in my life. And it's a huge deal that it's coming out. But the idea that here's a whole new movie that we don't know much about and hasn't been talked about over and over again, and we can have that process of discovery over and over again, it's almost like I have the same feeling and the same reverence towards Army of the Dead that I do towards Sucker Punch, which is the only sort of non-adaptive Zack Snyder movie.
Yeah, it's kind of a clean slate, right? So it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. I mean, a lot of the recent work has been all adaptations, right? And just the fact that anything new is coming out of Hollywood is kind of cause for a celebration, right?
Yeah, 100%. And the fact that it's him leading the charge for that, it's so appropriate that it's him. So I can't define which one I'm more excited for. I'm excited for them in much, much different ways. Do you have a preference as to what you're more excited for?
Well, I think right now I'm probably more excited for the Snyder Cut, only because it's got that added value of seeing some justice being done, right? Setting something back right in the world. And there's a lot of the narrative around changing structure of Hollywood and streaming and all, you know, there's all this added complexity around that that makes it interesting to me. But I think over the long term, I think, you know, the second one is more important in the long run, right? Getting more creative original stories out is really the recipe for success and the real test of an artist.
100%. I think the way you said it is perfectly. And when you talked about the first part, it made me think of that. You know, there was a huge debate. Does the Snyder Cut exist? Blah, blah, blah. The Snyder Cut literally exists right now. There are literally people getting pre-screeners of it who will see it before everybody else. It is out there in the universe right now. That's crazy to me that after everything, it's real. But then again, it's also crazy to me that we went so many years without a Snyder movie, and now we're getting two in the process of 3 months. Things have just been weird over the past couple of years. And like you said, it feels like maybe we're finally turning a corner. Maybe things are finally getting better. But yeah, if you haven't had a chance.
Can you say that in 2021? That might be a microaggression.
Well, that's true. But I thought it gets better was like a catchphrase. I thought it gets better.
I think only gay people can use that one.
Oh, well, you can't use it?
No, I gave up my gay privilege, remember? How can I use something that's so explicitly gay?
That's true. Okay, so definitely, William, you should check out the Army of the Dead trailer. It's pretty good. There's not a lot of, like, intellectual depth to it, but it looks like a Zack Snyder movie. To me, it looked like sort of Zack Snyder is also, I said Zack Snyder, I tweeted, is also releasing the Ayer cut, because it kind of looks like what the original Suicide Squad was intended to be. I mean, it's got badass slow motion shots. It's got visually beautiful shots. It's got like a haunting shot of an abandoned Las Vegas. So it's pretty cool. It's worth watching.
I'll add it to the list.
What did we learn this trip, William?
Well, I learned I have a trailer to watch. And that dogs are more valuable than humans. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
I learned the importance of, no matter how tired you are and how disconnected you are, to keep going forward with the commitments you made. So I'm just going to keep pushing forward with this show and make sure next week I'm really trying to come up with content among what I'm doing. I should have done a better job of that this week. As always, I want to thank everyone for listening. Without this show, it would just be me complaining into a microphone. As William said, you have nothing to talk about. Don't you have something to complain about? Yeah, I'm sure I do. I just didn't write it down, and I should have written it down, you know, like Adam Carolla talks about with his buck slips or whatever he calls them. I should have written some stuff down. I'm always telling my students to write stuff down. Something they should write down is how awesome libertarians are. We appreciate you, our liberty.me listeners. I think you're on the same page with us about the serious stuff. I think that's something that we are in agreement with the libertarians on this week. As always, if you want to support us, you can support me through buying my novel, The Cut, themidside.com/The Cut. You can see all the different ways to buy that, to purchase it. There's shirts on themidside.com/store. You can also support us via Patreon or Locals, themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/Locals. And of course, the most important way you can support us, William, is to do what? To tell?
Tell a friend.
There you go. Tell a friend. I was like, what? Did he not hear me? Is he ignoring me? this
getting ready to press a button.
To? Pressing a button is so hard. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emblezeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a doggo day. Man, we get to the end of the podcast. All of a sudden, everyone's calling me on my phone at the same time.
Oh, is that what the random drop you were going to play was? The you sure thing?
Yeah.
What was that?
Oh, that's my favorite Expanse drop, isn't it?
You sure this isn't personal?
You're damn right it's personal.